Psalm 148 clearly shouts out all the miracles of creation. Biblically speaking, miracles are events or phenomena that appear to violate natural laws, but that reveal God to the faithful. For example, the plagues described in the book of Exodus, the parting of the Red Sea, raising Lazarus from the dead, changing water to wine at Cana, curing the lepers, the blind, the lame. These wonders described in the New Testament were performed by Jesus and by the apostles. It is easy to understand how early cultures, Greeks, Hebrews, Christians, were dumbstruck by a lot of natural phenomena. An eclipse of the sun, like, for example, the one seen in other parts of the world on Christmas Day, is a perfect example. When you haven't yet mastered concepts like spherical planets and moons and a heliocentric universe, how does the sun disappear and reappear? We're smarter now. Many events are easily explained, even predicted. That monumental tsunami on December 26, 2004, the result of shifting tectonic plates, of course. But as a faithful watcher of Hallmark movies, I am reminded that miracles happen all the time. Deepak Chopra suggests that a miracle is basically a shift in perception, not something out there, but something in here. Our lives are so busy, so filled with important details that we must take care of now, that we fail to pause to pay attention to the magic that surrounds us. It is that kind of miracle I want to share with you this morning. This story comes from a book entitled Good News from North Haven by Michael Linvall. He's a Presbyterian minister, and for a number of years he was the pastor of the Second Presbyterian Church in North Haven, Minnesota. This story takes place in that church and that town, and it is called Christmas Baptism. Annie and the kids and I have come at last to be at home in this little town once unknown and unimaginable to us. Even so, that honeymoon between the pastor and the congregation is long since past, as witnessed by events that began to unfold the Sunday before Thanksgiving. During coffee hour, the taciturn, silver-haired pillar of the congregation, Angus McDowell, informed me that his son Larry and Larry's wife Sherry, who live in Spokane, Washington, would be visiting for the Thanksgiving weekend. Sherry, who must be in her mid-40s, it seemed, had just presented the McDowell clan with yet another child, a son named, believe it or not, Angus Larry. However, Angus informed me they were planning to call him Skip. Since they were going to be in town, and since Sherry's folks lived just in Mankato, and since this was going to be a big reunion, they wanted me to do the baby, as Angus put it, next Sunday. I got Angus out of coffee hour and into my study for an informal discussion about the integrity of the sacrament of baptism, which is what I assumed he meant by doing the baby. I asked Angus about Larry and Sherry's church affiliation in Spokane, explaining that it was best for a child to be baptized in a church where he would be raised. It seems, though, that they had not yet settled on a church that they liked, though they'd been there 9 years. I talked about the importance of the parents' commitment to the faith and the fact that they are asked to make some rather sweeping and deep promises in the course of it all. Angus soon caught my drift. Larry and Sherry ought to find a church home out in Spokane and have Skip baptized there. Angus listened to all this in a rather dignified and formal silence. He offered no response, much less argument. He simply rose without a word, shook my hand, and thanked me for my time. Fool that I was, I thought the matter was settled. Angus is an elder of the church, and one of that dwindling breed of courtly, gentle, but inflexible, stiff patriarchs of the church. In my experience, they seem to wear nothing but dark blue suits, a sort of uniform identifying them as members of an army in defense of the status quo. I remember encountering a whole flock of these blue-suited elders some 25 years ago on the day I was set before the church board to be examined for my confirmation. They were seated around a long, dark mahogany table in the church boardroom, 8 or 10 of them, all in their dark blue suits, and me, a skinny little 13-year-old boy in a corduroy jacket with sleeves 3 inches too short. They welcomed me, and then one of them, the one with wire-rimmed glasses, asked me my prearranged question from the catechism. What is effectual calling? I had been practicing the answer, which I can still recite, for 3 months. But something about his look and the way he emphasized the word effectual threw me off balance. I almost wet my pants. I believe I then gave the answer for the question, what is predestination? They confirmed me anyway, not out of mercy, but because I was 13, and when you're 13 and from a Presbyterian family, you were confirmed. They were hardly going to permit my fogginess on predestination and effectual calling alter tradition. Blue-suited elders are a resolute and determined lot. True to his type, after Angus left my office, he simply spoke with all the members of the board about a special meeting to approve the baptism of Angus Larry. They had the meeting, asked me to please stop by, and voted 9-0 in favor of the baptism. So on the morning after Thanksgiving, we did little Angus Larry. This congregation has an odd little baptismal custom. The pastor, I was gently informed when we first came here, always asks, who stands with this child? And then the whole extended family of the little one rises and remains standing for the ceremony. So, Angus Larry in my arms, I asked, who stands with this child? And up stood Angus in his blue suit and his wife Minnie and Sherry's folks from Mankato and a couple of cousins. After church, everybody rushed home to turkey leftovers, and I went back into the sanctuary to turn off the lights. A middle-aged woman, dressed Salvation Army style, was sitting in the front pew with a black plastic purse in her lap. I knew her as someone who always sat in the very last pew, as close to a door as possible, but I did not know her name. She seemed at a loss for words, and was hesitant about looking at me for very long. She finally said her name was Mildred Corey and commented on how lovely the baptism was. After another long pause, she said that her daughter, Tina, had just had a baby and, well, the baby ought to be baptized, shouldn't it? I suggested that Tina and her husband should call me and we would discuss the appropriateness of baptism. Mildred hesitated again, and then catching and holding my eyes for the first time, said, Tina's got no husband. Tina's just 18, and she was confirmed in this church 4 years ago. She used to come out for senior high fellowship, but then she started to see this older boy out of high school. She hesitated for a moment, gathered her courage, and let the rest of the story tumble out fearlessly. Then she got pregnant and decided to keep the baby, and she wants to have it baptized here in her own church, but she's nervous to come and talk to you, Reverend. She's named the baby James, she said, Jimmy. I said that I would bring the request to the church board for approval. When the matter came up at a meeting, there was a moot question or two about why in the world Tina Corey was keeping the baby. I had started to explain that everybody always knew, namely that Tina was a member of the church, an unwed mother, and that I didn't know who the father was. They all knew who the father was, of course. This is a small town. The father was young Jimmy Hawthorne, who had recently chosen a career in the nation's armed forces and was now completing basic training at Fort Bragg. A few questions were asked as to whether we could be certain that Tina would stick to the commitment she was making in having her child baptized. The Angus Larry affair had set me in a feisty mood, and I remarked that she and little Jimmy were, after all, right here in town, and that we could give them support. I did not have to say, and not in Spokane. They all thought it. The real problem was the picture of the baptism that we all had in our heads. Tina, still a student in our minds, little Jimmy in her arms, big Jimmy long fled to North Carolina, and Mildred Corey the only one who would stand when the question was asked. It hurt to think of it, but they approved it, of course. The baptism was scheduled for the last Sunday in Advent. The church was full, as it always is the Sunday before Christmas. The rumored snow had not yet come, though the sky was heavy with it. After the sermon, the elder who was to assist me in the baptism stood up beside me at the baptismal font and read the words I had written on a 3x5 card. Tina Corey presents her son for baptism. He kept looking at the card and not at Tina, who was rising to come forward as if there were some further point he wished to make. Down the aisle she came, nervously, briskly, smiling at me only, shaking slightly with month-old Jimmy in her arms, a blue pacifier stuck in his mouth. The scene hurt, all right, every bit as much as we all knew it would. So young this mother was, and so alone. One could not help but remember another baby boy, born long ago to a young and unwed mother, in difficult circumstances. I read the opening part of the service, noting Mildred Corey sitting strangely out of place in the front pew. Then I asked, "Who stands with this child?" I nodded at Mildred, slightly, to coax her to her feet. She rose slowly, looking to either side, and then returned my smile. My eyes went back to my service book. I was just about to ask Tina the parents' questions of commitment when I became aware of movement in the pews. Angus McDowell had stood up in his blue suit, Minnie beside him. Then a couple of other elders stood up. And then the sixth grade Sunday school teacher stood up. Then a new young couple in church. And soon, before my incredulous eyes, the whole church was standing up with little Jimmy. Tina was crying, of course, and Mildred Corey was holding onto the pew in front of her as though she was standing on the deck of a ship rolling in a great wind, which, in a way, she was. The unexpectedness of this departure from the routine at first disquieted, but then quieted us all, even little Jimmy, who had been wiggling and squeaking as though he might be preparing to screech. As the water touched his forehead, he seemed almost to focus his infant senses. The water rolled back into the thin wisps of baby hair, down the bridge of his nose, onto his cheek. His eyes looked to the side as though he were concentrating on something. Every eye was on the child, who was, for a moment, everybody's baby. I broke my gaze and looked up to the congregation to let them know I was about to offer the baptismal prayer. I noticed Angus straining to see Jimmy from three pews back. The old man was looking into the infant face with an open-mouthed smile that surely remembered his own baby, now a grown man with a baby of his own. The scripture reading that morning had been some verses from 1 John. See what great love the Father has given us, that we should be called children of God. No man has ever seen God. If we love one another, God abides in us, and his love is perfected in us. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. In that baptism, those old world words came alive. They were clothed in flesh, and everybody saw it. So they did witness a miracle at the Second Presbyterian Church the Sunday before Christmas. Not a spectacular parting of the Red Sea kind of miracle, but surely a shift in perception, a pausing and paying attention to the magic right in front of them. Maybe all put aside our endless to-do lists and pause and pay attention to the wondrous world and people all around us. So be it. Let us pause for silent prayer. So today, we've heard two very different scriptures. Matthew reminds us that Joseph and Mary and Jesus were refugees, people fleeing from imminent danger, totally dependent on the kindness of strangers. Joseph had a useful skill, but were they welcomed into a community with food and shelter, or were they treated with suspicion? Foreigners. Psalm 148 is full of praise, from the grandeur of the earth to the skies above to the wondrous creatures bordering on the miraculous. We have also had time to ponder yet another Christmas story, hopefully one with images we can relate to. Heavenly One, may we be encouraged by the span of these scriptures in this story to pay attention to those who seek shelter among us, as well as to the quiet moments and events which ask of us a shift in perception. In all these situations, may we find miracles. Amen.